Welcome to Intersight number 4. I'm really excited to be sharing this interview. This is one with one of my really close friends, Joseph. He's like a brother to me, and I met him several years ago, and it's been great to get to know him and spend time with him. He's one of the most hopeful people I know. He's very courageous and just. And what's really interesting is that with all those things, it would almost be hard to believe that Joseph, who is my age, we're both 25, has lived through a civil war, the Ebola crisis, and is now, of course, with all of us in this global health crisis. And of course, I wanted to interview him to see his thoughts on like what he sees, but also get to hear his background and his story. There's also another point to this interview that I hope comes across, which is we share a lot about what we've both learned from Liberia. I got to visit there. I, of course, learned from him, but I mean, he lived there growing up. And I think one of the things that perhaps is my most earnest desire in my heart is that we all see each other as one family, and we all see the knowledge that anyone possesses from any country, any social class, or any background as valid, and that we listen to each other as equals. And I believe that not only is this important out of respect, but it's actually beneficial to all of us, because as we learn from each other, we have way more potential than we would have if we refuse to do so. So I hope you enjoy, and if you are joining us for the first time on Intersight, if you would like to, please click the subscribe button and hit the bell to get notifications for next week's interview. And feel free to comment in the comments below so that we can keep a conversation going, a dialogue. And that is it. I hope you enjoy. Awesome. All right, Joseph, welcome to Intersight. This is our second interview. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. I'm good. Thanks for having me, Wyatt.
Yeah, thanks, Joseph.
As a matter of fact, I've been seeing a couple of your little mini videos for your students.
Oh my. I'm glad. Yeah, that was the beginning, I guess, and that warmed me up. So now I'm ready for something a little more, I don't know, a little more deeper. So this is exciting. Hey. Hold up. Yes. So, Joseph, this is my friend Joseph, and I met him several years ago, and we're very good friends now, and I'm going to have him introduce himself. So, Joseph, if you can just tell us, like, just what you do in your everyday life right now, and then maybe anything else you want to say to introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Joseph Lewis. I love being called Joe the Guy on campus, anyways. I'm a Liberian and I'm an immigrant in the United States. I am into health services administration and I'm a senior student. On a daily basis, I go to school, like college life demands all of us. Beyond that, I also volunteer in my community. I'm an animator that is a mentor for a couple of youth in our community. So it's a kind of a basic mentorship to these young people. So other than school, work a little bit and do that in my community. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, it's so great to have you here. Okay, Joseph, so you're here, you're an international student, and what are you studying?
I'm into health services administration.
Excellent. So I wanna know a story of what got you to this point. So now you're in the US studying health services, but throughout your life, what are some of the events that got you to choose this path that you're on right now?
Oh, that's a pretty good question, especially the part of the United States I'm in, Minnesota. It's pretty cool. So I should have good reasons for being this part of the world, right?
Yeah, you better have good reasons.
Right. So I moved into the United States in 2017 with the basic idea of coming to college. I'm in the last years of my college, my undergraduate studies. Hopefully in the year to come, I might be going for master's in public health. I don't know where that journey leads, but that's the rough plan for now. I come from a family, like what brought me here, I'm actually from a family that my mom, dad, in fact, no one in my family have actually been outside of, beyond the walls of high school. So I know like growing up, education is something that is kind of really big in my family, just for the fact like none of them went to college. So it has always been the dream of my mom and dad for me to go to college and kind of lead as one of the first person in my family to step foot in a direction that, of course, probably no one ever tread. So that is indeed a big motivation for me coming to college, my family influence from that perspective. Yeah.
Beautiful. That's cool. Can you tell us a little bit about your parents?
Oh, and interestingly, why he was back home, so he met my mom. My dad is currently not alive, so I didn't get to meet him. But, you know, my family is, I come from like a little family of four kids, mom and dad. So a little family of six. My mom, dad, like I said previously, none of them went to school. My dad, in fact, at some point he was the smartest guy in our family because he went up to like ninth grade. Now, like I'm in college, I hope that credit I can take it a little bit. They come from like a background of hardworking people who like just basically do agriculture for livelihood. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit of what my family do for a living. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. And I remember when I was there, I got to see Joseph. You were such a great host. It was really wonderful because I got to see both the city life of Liberia when I was there, but I also got to see the village life. So maybe you could shed some light on that. What was it like for you growing up in the village, but also going to the city? And how was that? What was that transition like?
So pretty much, I was born in my mom's village. That's Lofa. That's one of the rural parts of Liberia. So it kind of happened in a very interesting ways, anyways. So I was actually born in the middle of a civil crisis, 1994. By then, Liberia had this civil crisis that went on for 14 years. So after the civil crisis ended in 2003, I think my parents kind of make like the choice that they wanted me to go to school. So, and what is also interesting, and it is a reality by then and up to today in my country, not many like rural places have quality schools. So if you are pretty much going to be pursuing education, that requires you leaving your family, all of your what you've been accustomed to in life in the village, and then having a relative or close family member who live in the city of Monrovia, you have to get them to school. So it is indeed a big decision any parents would want to make. Of course, knowing the fact that my mom, my dad, they all come from agricultural background. So in that setting of culture, kids play a very important role because, of course, they are means by which you get human resource, like get mass produced and to earn livelihood. So definitely it came to the point, just being like the only kid when I was 10 years of age, my mom and dad has to decide like, hey, you got to go to the city, live with your uncle and then go to school. That's what we want for you. So it was definitely a big change for me. I never been to school. I never lived in a city. I think it was even interesting, like I have to drive up to like 9 to 10 hours to get to Monrovia to school. So that was even a big change for me, because by then, all this why I never like driven a car that long up to the age of 10. Yeah, so life in the village was a little different. It was a small community. Everyone is caring. Everyone is so hardworking. But in the city, indeed, it's a different life. Everyone lives a kind of a really like rural kind of living. Everyone goes to work. Kids don't have more time with their family. You are more zoomed into school in the city than as like into play and swimming, running around in the forest, in the village and things like that. So that was a little shot of what I can see as comparison between like the village and the city life back home. Wow. Yeah.
No, that's exciting. Man, that must've been something else at 10 years old.
A kind of a learning experience even up to now. But I think one of like the important things also is I pretty much always went back home in my mom's village whenever vacation came around. So I didn't entirely lost connection. I could still speak language up to now, still speak my language. So that was huge. And in the city again, you have all of these different ethnic groups of people living. back door, one-to-one neighbor and things like that. Mm-hmm. Part of that is a lot of pressure to communicate in English, and my English wasn't good. I didn't even know if I actually spoke English back then. But yeah, moving in the city, that's one big thing. You got to overcome this aspect of not speaking your dialect constantly because no one understands you much, and then speaking. It was pretty.
Can you show us how to say hello, how are you in Pele?
Oh, in Pele is Ilawagbe, Yatuoye. Yatua is hello. Yatua e ilawagbe wae.
Thank you. I would try, but I had my experience and you saw it, so it was fun. Hey, Joseph, related to this, right. I just want to say that I just make a comment. You know, sometimes when people are talking in certain discourses, they might think of, you know, a rural place, especially in a continent like Africa, as being like less developed than an urban area or like another country in the world. But I just want to share this insight that I don't know if I ever told you this, but it's always been a story that I share with people and it's really touched me. I remember when we were in the village and your grandpa was going around in the morning and you were like, you know what he's doing? And I said, no. He's like, he's the town crier, which is like really interesting, right? I'd heard about it, you know, in the past, but that was cool that they had that. And then they called the meeting. Yeah. And it was really sweet what you were talking about. So for those that are watching, he was sharing with me that these the villages are organized in these groups of villages to have like kind of a one town that is like their capital, if you will. So they all work together. And what they were discussing at this town meeting, this village meeting, was that one of the villages wanted to separate from the other villages and, you know, kind of live like work on their own for some reason. Right, and right. It was really sweet for me. Joseph was translating from his stepdad that was sharing with the group that in this small rural village, that what they had learned was that through their experience in the past, there were only Christians living in the village. And at some point, you know, Muslims started to come. I didn't get quite like how that happened, but like people that were Muslims started to live there. And they learned that their contributions to their community were actually really helpful for them, for their progress. And so his stepdad was sharing this insight, and that was help was like what they were talking about for the group were why they felt that, no, these people shouldn't separate from us. We have to like be together in unity. And so that's something that I just felt like was very profound and highly civilized. And it's really touched me. And then, I don't know, it's just right here and here.
Right. That's a very cool experience. And I'm glad like you really like nailed it. You have all of the details and everything. I don't think you need any addition to that story. You already have everything, you know?
Yeah. That's
my granddad's profession. He would say like in that area, in his context of survivor, he's a town crier, so he goes around and announces. And again, like the structure of this society is there is not much access to technology. There is, of course, like you saw it for yourself, there is not electronics, radio station can barely reach everyone. So you have this small village of people and they need information that they need to go with their day-to-day life for the security of the place or anything like that. So you have one person who have to volunteer that time to be able to give out this information. So fortunately, my granddad had to be one of those. And he have like a really strong tool for that too.
Nice. Man. Yeah, your granddad, oh man. You know, I was actually just telling somebody about your granddad because we were talking about malaria. And I was like, I remember when I was in the village in Liberia, everybody had malaria nets except for this one guy that like didn't really care about it. He was fine. He was pretty tough. Yeah. Wow, Joseph, this is great.
For sure.
So, let's go a little deeper. I would really love to hear your thoughts. You know, I know you are working right now because you're an intern working at a nursing home, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So, you're working full time, and thank you for that. But, you know, all around the world, so many people are in this time where they're staying in their house, they're not going to any or most social events. And so, you know, they're having to completely change their pattern of life, and it allows a lot of time for reflection and contemplation. So
right.
I was wondering if you could share with us a little bit, you know, in this time, while everyone is reflecting, maybe while you're getting a time to reflect, what are some things you feel like you would want to share with anyone? You know, something that you feel like you notice in our society that could be a little better. And yeah, I mean, that's
right. Right. Well, these have afforded all of us a unique opportunity to reflect on our current state of existence. Also with the thought process in mind that what now can we see as an opportunity to better society, better our life, better our existence for the years and years to come as well. So my line of thinking pretty much have been like, this is a global crisis. This whole coronavirus thing is a global crisis. So my line of thinking and reflection have always been within a global term, you know, what we as a collective society can learn from this experience, and then that can pave the way for us to move into the future to come and things like that. Mm-hmm. So one of the first thing that always jump at me whenever I kind of put myself in this framework to think as we go along on a daily basis is, I think one of the stories I feel we have missed as humanity is we are all one, and it makes so much sense for us to prioritize global solidarity over national interest. Mm-hmm. I think one of the takeaways for me from this whole corona epidemics. And if I would be given a little room to expand on this big kind of idea, I guess, is we can see so much like when coronavirus came, and corona, like any other epidemics from the existence of man, hasn't always come from one culture, hasn't always come from one country, hasn't always come from democracy, hasn't come from communists. It has always been there to target humanity as a whole. So I think it would make sense that if we want to learn anything if we want to learn anything and then move out and go forward, it's for us to think in the sense of the whole of humanity as a one society with one thoughts and oneness of humanity. So much can go wrong if we think of ourselves just as individuals, like we can see now. Corona started, people were national governments were more concerned of preparing their healthcare system and waiting for them to be hit by corona. Mm. But or where we are all one, or at least we are sharing the sentiment of oneness of humanity, it will be one in which everyone moves to the forefront to assist whatever government that is in need, whatever country that is in need. I think that's one of the biggest takeaway for me, this corona epidemics have taught me, and I hope that we can hold on to that as a global society and be able to move on. When an epidemic strike, that has been like the bubonic plague in history, it has been Ebola, now corona. It hasn't always come for the developed countries, for the underdeveloped country. It has come for all of us. And if there is anything we do, is to collectively move together as a one human family to tackle it.
Beautiful.
You gave me this question ahead, so I gotta organize my thoughts too. Yeah, and another aspect too that comes to me, another learning opportunity with can take away from this coronavirus is for us to move in the direction of believing in the knowledge that science has to offer us. Yeah. From the very beginning and inception of coronavirus, the scientists have always been doing tremendous work. They have always informed us what to do, what to stay safe, and things like that. So I believe this is one of those classical instances where our knowledge and our interest in the field of science should grow more, because they are meant to kind of help us live a good life. And any tendency to go away from that is a contradiction, and it comes with a lot of unwanted circumstances, as we can see today. So part of going forward, I would think, is for us to believe in science and the knowledge that it provides. And this can just be, coronavirus can just be one of those instances we can look at, and also cross-examine this to other things like climate change and other things like that. So science is a very powerful tool, if anything this crisis have taught us is for us to believe in it and move forward as well.
Yeah.
So two thoughts I've been kind of thinking on over the period of time, and I hope anything comes out, I can shoot it at you too.
Yeah. Thank you, Joseph. No, that's amazing. Yeah. And it really has implications for like, how do we, you know, interact? So for example, this increase of appreciation for science, not just like where we appreciate that some institution is researching, but actually that like all humanity, all individuals are seeking knowledge and doing that. Because if you think about it, that would help this relationship, right? Because right now there's this, we see this tension where like, you know, one group says this, which could be from science, could be from something else. And another group says this, and there's like this mistrust, right? But as humanity really appreciates that science, you know, I don't know, the practice of science, I guess, and like, and continues to acquire it and use it, then everyone is seeking that knowledge. So then little by little, like not all at once, but like organically, then humanity will start to have that, you know, common knowledge together. And then there'll be like more trust, you know, and then we'll be able to move more unifyingly, you know, when something like this happens.
I think, right. And I think that's the basic idea, because there is a lot of tendency in the world to look at science to be like in competition with a lot of our normal existence. And I think of that mostly like in the areas of politics, to be a little specific on that. There's always this constant battle between politicians, political campaigns, political ideas, and that of science, as if like science is competing with this already established institution. So it's proposition. You see like people argue that, oh, it's science in competition with a political campaign, a political ideas. But I think if there is anything this crisis have taught us, is for us to believe in the knowledge that science provides as a way of going forward.
As a way to move forward, you said?
Yeah, as a way like, to move forward.
Yeah, beautiful. Awesome. Okay, I'm gonna transition us a little bit. You know, I'm gonna share another story from Liberia that I learned later on through my research on the internet. And I shared this with you, I thought it was really neat. So I learned that the civil war in Liberia ended in 2003. And yep. Some of the people that were really instrumental in ending the war was this group of women. And I was really inspired by hearing this story, and you could find it on YouTube. Actually, the documentary is called Praying the Devil Back to Hell. I believe that's what it's called. And these women gathered together to essentially like protest, but even like go to the places where the government officials were having their discussions about the war and, you know, peace talks and things like that. And I don't want to get too much into the story, but if you watch it, you see what a big role they played. I was really inspired by one part where they were, the women that had started it were mostly Christian. And at one point they realized they needed to get a more powerful force. So they decided to reach out to the Muslim community. And one of the things that they said as they were doing this to help people realize that we're all equal is they said, because they're in a war, and they said, does a bullet decide between Christian and Muslim? And that it helped them to really realize that they're all affected by this tragedy. And so it leveled the playing field. And so I think about that in our current circumstances, you know, because I've seen some videos, and there was actually talk, you know, in the beginning, like maybe this doesn't affect this race or that race, but we're seeing that that's not true. You know, it's really showing us that we're all one. You know, I've heard a lot, it's a common enemy, a global enemy that we all have in common. So.
Yeah, and I love how you put that, you cross-examine that idea from like Liberia and even put it on a global scene, you know, and how it makes so much sense. Because back then, during the civil crisis, it was one like, you needed to know what everyone has in common, right? This guy fighting for the government, this guy fighting for these rebel forces, this guy on the neutral side, what do they have in common? You will see like a lot of these civil actors of these, whatever you might call them, soldiers, they pretty much have parents, they have mom, they have sisters. And again, in our culture, it is really a big deal. And I think like that is probably like every other culture too. Like the issue of women coming to talk to you, they are perceived as your parent. no matter how they are, it's like that's your mom right there. So there is this idea that you need to like find a common ground between everyone. So it was based on this idea that these women, and even up to now, we still have Lehman Bowie, who is one of like the key actors in Liberia, who led this movement of this mass movement of youth from different religious group coming together to like talk to people and things like that. So taking that narrative from Liberia and putting it on like a global scene, you can see like our common enemy, like you mentioned, is pathogen, you know, diseases, viruses. They've been here throughout. They have always been here since our existence. We can go back several years into the field of epidemiology. We can see so much that our common enemy have done to us throughout the time. So if there is any sense of moving forward, is this idea like there is more sense in uniting as a one community in fighting this common enemy than going back, like going apart, you know? So I think that can be like the moral of this story, or I hope that can be the moral that we all can learn to move forward, that when it comes to things like this, there's no such thing as developed nation or not developed nation. There is no such thing as democracy, communism. We are all one and we are all in it together. And part of going forward is to stay together and move forward. I think that's the moral for the story for me. Hmm. Reference, yeah. By the way.
Yeah.
Dude, I love your question also, how I got into what I'm studying now. I don't know if we can backtrack to that a little bit too.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think that was you mentioned that. Can you try to like rephrase it kind of and see, like ask me it?
Like tell me your story as far as what got you to the point where now you're studying this. So like what events happened in your life that caused you to want to pursue this field?
Right. So like I said previously, I'm in college. So anyways, to backtrack a little bit there, I would think of myself as a product of a lot of these many circumstances or happenings in my life that have shaped me into the person I am today. And the first one, real quick to jump at it, is I'm in college. Why? Because my parents, none of them were able to go to college. So I always wanted to make that difference and things like that, right? And I'm into health services administration. And the short-term goal in a year or two to come is to go for a public health degree. So I really love the aspect of healthcare the field of healthcare. And what led me to that is, of course, you know this from a personal account of me, is my dad passing away. Back home, we inherit a healthcare system that doesn't do so much well. And it came a point where they have 14-year civil crisis, which even like drained the whole healthcare system. And then later 2014, 2015, we also had Ebola crisis, which also even like dilapidated like the infrastructures and that of like the healthcare systems in general. So my country has inherited a healthcare system for a long period of time that doesn't do also much well. So it was out of this healthcare system, I would think, that was able to serve my family when my dad passed away, when my dad was ill. So we have to like make arrangement. And again, this is a reality that many African, many Liberian families face whenever one person is ill. The possible and best alternative to do is to look for a healthcare system in another country. So there is this constant migration of Liberians in different parts of the world to seek healthcare. And that is only if you have the means and the resources to transport your loved one. Unfortunately, my family was in part of those class of people who had the resources to take my dad away. So as such, it was kind of sad for my family to kind of take him from the city, because the healthcare there could not figure out what was wrong with him, to take him to a traditional herbalist to see to figure out what medical condition he had, and that did not go well as well. Mm. It's not just like a comfortable feeling to have your passing away where you don't even know what killed them. You don't even know like the diagnosis of anything related to that and stuff like that. And this is virtually a challenge faced by the whole of Liberia. I can lump all Liberians in this. We have a very deplorable healthcare system. So I think for me, if there's anything I want to live my life for, is to see how best we can improve system like that. And I have always hold on to the idea, like if anything going to work for any section of society, I think the native people who come from that society, who understand it, they are the people who can full initiate it and be able to contribute to their fullest. So that's what got me into here, into health services administration, hopefully public health, and then to return home and be able to do what I love to do.
That's great.
Yeah.
Really great, Joseph. Hey, we're going to close this. I'm going to try something a little new. So I'm going to ask you some questions. So, I mean, you've seen a lot in your life, and you're so this really hopeful person. And so that's, you know, one of the points of this show is to help people to develop that inner sight, that vision that helps them to see through, you know, the ups and downs and the challenges that they face in life, to be able to see certain things. So I'm going to ask you some questions, and then I want you to reflect, and if you would please share with us, it would really mean a lot. So the first one, and you just have to say, you know, one example, is growing up, when did you see cruelty? Or like, in who did you see cruelty?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I have always thought of things that has to do with the quality of a person, like cruelty. I think it can go both ways. We all have those. It's just a matter of when they come out. But to answer your question, I think for me, I would likely think of it as from our political leaders back home, I would think. I think there is some degree when you use power for self-aggrandizement, and you use power to subjugate people. I think that's the worst form of cruelty for me. I have personally seen back home, and that have had a lot of adverse impact. So even like the 14-year civil crisis we talk about in Liberia, all that come from the misappropriation of power and pretty much using power for one own satisfaction. I think that's the worst kind for me. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. That's really tough. Okay. It's going to get a little lighter, but at least it's, I think so. So next question, in who or when in your life have you seen kindness?
Kindness, I think, again, it's a quality that we all have. It's just the matter of making a conscious, determined effort to bring it out to light through the work and experience it. Mm-hmm. But I would rather think of it in the sense, in who do I appreciate kindness the most? Because it kind of helped me to just think from like a better standpoint. I have always seen and appreciate kindness in little kids, and that's like little kids or little children of from anywhere. I think they are some of the most kind people you can ever meet, and their kindness is most genuine. They have no like self motive, or they have no like alternative motive for being kind. So I think, yeah. And then that's just come from like my background of working with kids as a children class teacher. So yeah, the most kind for me.
Awesome.
Seen that I have seen that a lot of time in them.
That's so true. Yeah, man. Okay, next question. Again, in who or when did you see courage?
Courage. I think of courage as, I associate that whole world with my mom. I would say my whole family, but my mom in particular. And she brought me up throughout, obviously. But it's more in the sense of lot of the sacrifices she had to make for me, and lot of things that she has to deny herself of, and also support me to go into things that she don't even know I'm going to be good at. I think that's really courageous for me. Yeah. She pushed me so much to go to college, to go to school, and after school, you have to keep looking forward to go to college, keep going, and just knowing like she has no idea of what actually like a classroom look like, you know, but she just feeling like it's going to be good for you and stuff like that. And as far as taking me away, far away from her, in as much as she lost me, she has to take me far away, several miles away to the city to go to school where she lived far away from me. I think that's really courageous. So I think of courage as my mom.
That's beautiful. Wow. Okay. Speaking of beauty, next question. In who or when have you seen beauty?
Beauty. I have seen beauty in my mom's village, just growing up there. It is a kind of quiet place that is in the middle of nowhere. There is forest everywhere around. There's rivers running through the pastures. So I think growing up, that was my conception of beauty. And I think I still hold on to that today, regardless of where I live. There is so much that reminds me of there. There is so much calm that takes over you whenever you are there. So that's, and you are ever in the presence of nature. So I can't think of anything beautiful than that. I could go like to the biggest cities in the world. I would appreciate the life there, but I don't know if I'm going to say it's beautiful compared to my mom's village.
I can attest to the beauty of your mom's village. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next one. Where or in who have you seen justice, or when have you seen justice?
When I think of the most pure and authentic form of justice, I think of what I believe, my faith, the Baha'i faith. I think that's where I have come to understand the true nature and the concept of justice for me. Justice is not something you do from a position of authority. It's not also something you do to please other people or to meet some sort of expectation. I think justice in its pure form is something that is meant to make everyone happy, to promote cooperation and things like that. I think I have come to understand this concept of justice from a more deeper perspective, even gain an appreciation of it from the standpoint of my belief. So the Baha'i faith is definitely where I've seen justice. And I think it's beautiful in that way. Yeah. This is a really nice question, by the way, why?
I know. And they're awesome answers. So one last one. This is the last one. So thinking about courage and beauty and justice, what are your thoughts as far as where do these things come from? Where do beauty, where do justice, where do courage come from?
That's a good question. I think they are from our creators. I think of them as a gift that we all were given to by our creator God. And I think these are gifts that we can use to better our human conditions. We have it in all of us. It's just the matter of striving on a day-by-day basis to bring them out. So, yeah, I definitely think it was given to us by God and to use for our upliftment as a society, as a person, on a day-by-day basis. Yeah.
Wonderful closing words. Thank you, Joseph, so much for joining us on Inner Sight.
Thanks for having me, Wyatt.
Hey, my pleasure.
Hi.
Well, I'll talk to you again, brother.
Yeah, talk to you soon, man.
All right. Take care. Have a good night.
You too. Stop ruling, the rule is back. You probably won't give it up, cause you ain't seen better. Wanna send a message to the world, open letter. If you've been working for the world and you fed up, I bet you're not alone, and you can do better. These are the signs the world needs to let up. New world order, the search for the better. God's promised kingdom on earth. Gotta search other religions if you need some.